Hello and welcome to the Sport for Business podcast. I'm your host, Rob Hartnett, and in today's 68th episode of the show, we are joined by Hall of Fame former captain of the Irish women's rugby team and latterly RTE analyst Fiona Coughlan. There was a record crowd for an Irish women's Six Nations game at the RDS this season, but still no win. And now the focus switches to Cork this weekend and the visit of Wales. Fiona joined us at Energia for an event which was looking to encourage more fans to come along and cheer on the girls in green. Our rugby coverage on Sport for Business is in partnership with Bank of Ireland, who are urging us and Irish rugby to never stop competing. So, here's the conversation with Fiona. So we've two games gone now in the Guinness Six Nations, two defeats. France, we couldn't have expected much more than it. Italy feels like one that got away. How do you think that Ireland are performing relative to how they did last year? Do you think that we're on an upward curve which is moving in exactly the right direction?
Yeah, like I think particularly after the French game, I just thought there was big improvements in terms of their defence. You know, last year they shipped 40-odd tackles. This year it was down to, I think, 17 or something. Still, France put up a big score. But the fact that they didn't let their heads drop, they stayed in the game and scored two late tries was impressive. When you talk about, well, France and England are fitter and stuff, that Ireland were actually matching them then on fitness, that they weren't tired. I thought that positivity was good going into the Italy game, a game which I felt that that's where they needed to measure themselves on. It's not measuring yourself against England and France because they are further ahead. That Italian game, and they started so well. Like, I was like, this is brilliant. We're seeing them attack. There wasn't very many handling errors in those first couple of minutes. The penalty try went in. I was like, right, kick on now. And they didn't. They weren't ruthless enough. And they still had lots of possession. They still had lots of territory. But yeah, they had 18 entries into the 22, and not being able to convert to the level they needed to was disappointing. And look, yes, the handling errors, the lack of composure, which, you know, they've taken ownership of, but it's now fixing that and not letting that seep into how they're playing when they're under pressure in an attack in 22, that they just crumble basically, which they did numerous times when they had opportunities to put Italy away. And it's funny, they were so dominant that game, but I kind of felt if they won it at the end that they actually would have robbed Italy, because I thought Italy were more composed when they needed to be, and those old heads in Italy and those experienced players took control when they needed to, and I think that's what Ireland lacked. However, in saying that, I do think they're in a better place than they were in terms of the energy within the squad, the positivity in the squad. Scott Beaman, I know he hasn't been a head coach before, but he's an experienced coach that knows the level that they need to be at in order to compete. It's a slow burner. You look at the men's game, it's only now, the men are playing 100 years, they're professionals since 99. It's only in the last, I suppose, 10 years that we're seeing them hit the heights and be top of the world. The women's game is so much further behind, and those development pathways haven't been in place. Hopefully now we'll see them come through, more players come through, but it is a slow burner. And, you know, I know they were targeting three home wins in the Six Nations. To be honest, I think one is good, and I think that's progress. One win and then performances, that you keep growing and building on those performances, and then over the next couple of years we see more players come through, that there's competition for places, and the squad grows and gets an identity of how Scott Beaman and his coaching team want to play. So and I wonder, was that Italy game the chance? Was that the one, or can they go and do something against Wales or Scotland? And I think they need to now. They need to go and do something against Wales or Scotland. But they made life tough for themselves not getting that win against Italy.
They did. And to those who are looking at it just based on the scoreline, they'll kind of think, oh, Ireland lost again. It did feel, being there in the stadium, watching it. They always say in sport, it's the hope that kills you. My God, there was hope at the end there, because Katie Corrigan's try, and you kind of think, oh, well, maybe, you know. And then the kick to the corner, you know, lovely, confident, everything was happening. You kind of thought, just move it to the middle. Don't put the pressure on the kicker to actually sort of win the game from out on the sideline. But it just didn't happen again. And when you score in those instances, it's more likely you're going to score again. But when you drop the ball, is it more likely that you're going to drop it again the next time? That seems
That's what it seemed like. When you have, I would think it was 28 handling errors, and the majority of those were in Italy's 22. When Ireland were on the attack, when they had good front football from big carries, and it kind of just seemed to go through the squad, it wasn't just one person. Like, I know Baden Parsons was, it was a walk-in try, she caught that ball, but it wasn't just her, it was throughout the squad. So it's like it seeped in, and no one actually grabbed them by the scruff of the neck and said, right girls, we need to sort this out, let's not get ahead of ourselves, not let's not think we're scoring the try, let's actually work it and just calm things down. And unfortunately that didn't happen. I would hope they learned from it. I did question some of the selection choices around experienced players not being in the 23, whether they would or not is all hindsight now, whether the likes of Hannah O'Connor or Tricky would have been able to control things a little bit better. But it disappointed when it was there from them. And we did see glimpses of, so the French game we spoke about their defence, in the Italy game there was, we saw a bit more shape. And like, attack is a harder thing to get right. There's so many working parts. Defence is easier, and I think you see that certainly the men's game. I'll go back to England. For the last year since Borthwick took over, we've talked about their identity of shape. They get to a World Cup semi-final playing poorly, get there, and they're terrible against Scotland. So many handling errors as well, and then they turn around within 2 weeks. But I do think they have more experience in their squad, and I hope that this team can turn it around in those 2 weeks. I just don't know if they're there yet.
Okay, on a technical level, those handling errors, like, I kind of remember when you won the Grand Slam, it was in Italy. It was in an absolute mud bath and the rain was coming down, and you could have been excused for dropping the ball on a couple of occasions, but I don't remember a single thing. I don't remember a mistake which could have actually sort of led to it, because it was such a low scoring game when there was the most intense pressure. Can you remember anything from there that you're not seeing now? Is there something technically which they could, should, will be working on to actually help in that, or is it all in the mind?
No, some of it's technical in terms of knowing their role and their position of where they need to be, not fading away from a pass, really attacking onto the pass, and then the passer, like some of them were fired, that caused knock on. I question whether Enya should have skipped the pass, skipped Dan O'Brien out to, like, it was a catchable ball, but was that the right option? So there is some technical areas around you running onto the ball as opposed to the ball waiting for you, but ensuring that pass quality is important as well. Not fading, I felt sometimes they were fading away from the pass as well, and with an eye on where the ball needs to go next, as opposed to on what their role was at that time, was to catch the ball and then do something, as opposed to doing something before they caught the ball. So I do think there's technical things, but I felt that it was the mental side of it that it kept happening, and across the whole team as well.
Let me take you off the pitch for a minute. We're out here in Energia headquarters at the moment, and they've run a great campaign. Don't be half a fan, because if you support rugby, you should support the men's and the women's game. Every game in the Aviva Stadium is 50,000 plus. You can't get a ticket for love nor money. And yet we were celebrating, and right to celebrate, the fact that we had 6,600 in the RDS. But are our expectations too low? Like, where were the other 44,000 rugby fans? Why do they not make that journey into the RDS?
I still think it's a society thing about where women's sport stands. And, you know, people say, oh, like, they're not winning, people want to win teams. But even back in the 80s, when the Irish men's team weren't winning, they were selling out Lansdowne Road. So I think it's a society thing about it and around women's sport in general. I think there's an awareness thing. I think Energy had done a thing before the men's game asking people, did they know it was on? And some people genuinely didn't, which, like, I don't know, maybe I get so consumed in that all my following on social media is I'm so engaged in it that I'm like, how could you not know it's not on? And it's on TV, like, how could you not know? But maybe that there's a piece there on that exposure piece as well still. But it is disappointing. Great to hit another record, and year on year we're growing and growing. But yeah, it's disappointing when you see the potential that could be there. And I keep saying, I think it's brilliant for families. Get young kids out to see international sport, like an Irish team playing sport. Doesn't matter what sport it is, it doesn't matter what gender it is, there's an Irish team. And I think ticket pricing is really good. I think it's really accessible. The fact that they're moving around Ireland is good as well. But it is disappointing. But that's, I think, a societal thing, and that shift is going to take longer.
Yeah, it can happen. Like, we've seen it with the football, where you bring Northern Ireland into the Aviva Stadium and you've got 36,000 people there. So, like, there is an appetite for it. And it's not right to move into the Aviva Stadium with the rugby team as yet, because they're not quite at that sort of, at that number. We often blame the media for not giving the exposure, and in many ways that remains the case. But to be fair, the coverage of this team has been very good. The promotion of the women's tournament during the men's tournament, RTE and Virgin Media both weighing in behind it and giving a lot of promotion to it. Yeah, there's a trick being missed somewhere, and you don't want to blame the public, but we do need to actually just sort of put up when it comes to, you know, to going out and supporting the team.
Yeah, I genuinely don't know what it is, and maybe some people, they don't have an interest in women's rugby, and it's actually just rugby, same laws, you know, and they can say, oh, the standard's not the same, but, like, you know, that shouldn't matter. This is an event, it's an Irish team, and I don't know what's missing. I don't know how we get there, because you said media coverage certainly has improved, and the exposure in that, like, TV, radio, you know, there's print media, like, it is there, not to the same level the men's there, but it is there. So I don't know what it is, and I don't think anyone does. I think if someone had the magic pill to fix it, they would, but I think it's important that we just continue trying to grow it, and hopefully the performances improve, and then, you know, people love a good out bandwagon, and that's what we saw with the soccer. I think that they were going on a good win, they get to a World Cup, and that just generates, you know, younger kids saying, oh, let's go, and I want to be Katie McCabe, and, you know, all of that. So I think that's just, it's going to be a slow process, but hopefully this generation, when they grow up, that they'll know that, you know, it's normal just to go to women's events.
Yeah, especially important that we do get to qualify for the next World Cup, because it's over in England. There's going to be a bandwagon that will develop around that. We have to be on that. If we don't make it, and it's less likely now that we will from the Six Nations, how easy is the pathway? Because there's more teams involved in it now, so it should be, but that doesn't necessarily translate into easy.
Yeah, like, obviously next best after England, France, because they've already qualified, so I don't think we're going to be in the running for that unless we win our next two home games anyway, and then results, so the results going your way. So next then it's back to WXV. So being in WXV2 was certainly better, and because Ireland won WXV3, it got another place in there, but it's a playoff of who finishes bottom of the Six Nations. So this is assuming England and France are 1 and 2, whoever's number 3, they qualify, and they're in WXV1, 4 and 5 are WXV2, and then 6th is playoff for WXV2 because Ireland won it. So there is huge opportunity to get through in WXV2, definitely. And indeed WXV3 as well, depending on what way other results go. So the fact that the competition's gone from 12 to 16 teams, again, is a good opportunity for Ireland to qualify. I can't see them not qualifying, but then I did say that, I guess, after the qualifiers the last time. They have to be there. Like, that just, whatever about Scott Beaman saying he wants to finish third to get direct qualification, you have to qualify for a World Cup and in England. That's where you have to be. You have to be at that top table. And I say top table, Six Nations, you know, every year we have that WXV now. I don't think Ireland are ready for WXV1. I think they will be served better in WXV2. Scotland were in there, they got really good wins, and we've just seen them develop further. Italy, likewise, they actually didn't lose in WXV2, but lost on points differential to Scotland. Yeah. So that's why they didn't win the trophy. So I think WXV2 would be good for them to qualify out of that.
Okay, the players all talk about manifesting their own destiny. Let's hope that they can do that. Just finally, I want to talk to you about the role of commentary and analyst now. You've grown into it incredibly well. You were always there, right on the, you know, right on the money when it comes to it. But are you enjoying it, or do you look and do you still feel a twitch in your leg that you actually want to be out there, sort of rucking and mauling and being a captain?
Oh, look, you always want to be on the pitch. Yeah, like, hands down. And when I retired, I was probably the fittest I ever was. And but life moves on, and I couldn't even imagine being tackled now or tackling anyone. They're looking for players for an over, I think it's an over to 35s, and I was like, is a tag, like, I'll do that, I'll do my contact. Yeah, look, I do enjoy, I suppose, particularly during COVID, it was great, you know, I got to go to the games, and you know, I think it's sitting in probably the next best seat in terms of, I certainly wouldn't be a referee. I don't know how Joey Neville did it. Coaching, like, it's just so time consuming. Like, obviously a full-time job teaching, it's so time consuming to coach, even at a club level. You're out 2 nights a week and a weekend, and I have a 2-year-old son, so it works for my life, even though it takes up a huge amount of time. My partner, he's like, oh, you're watching rugby again, like you could have three screens on at once. So it does take up a huge amount of time, but I do enjoy it, and I'm thankful for the opportunities that I've been given. And yeah, but I enjoy it. It's tough though, like, and you have to watch a lot of rugby, but also you make the wrong call sometimes on commentary, and sometimes you're looking, I find it difficult sometimes, you have the screen and then you have the live game, and then you're trying to figure something out, but you forget that the screen is there. So like, even so many years into it, I'm still kind of torn about on the pitch. So like, I think you can always improve, I think you can always get better, but I'm enjoying it and I'm really thankful for the opportunities. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, listen, thanks a million for taking the time out today. Best of luck for the last three games in this, watching it either from the next best seat in the house or from the stands, Ravenhill and Virgin Media Park down in Cork, the next two venues, and then in the middle of that over to the Lions Den of England as well. But we will manifest our own destiny and we'll hope for the best. Fiona Coughlin, thanks very much.
Cheers.
Thanks to Fiona for taking the time out to explain some of the reasons why we should still be positive about the Irish women's rugby team, despite the results not quite going our way yet. The big game this weekend is on Saturday evening at 4:45 in Virgin Media Park in Cork. Get there if you can. You will enjoy the atmosphere and the experience. You can find out more about what we do day in, day out at sportforbusiness.com. We have twice daily bulletins and twice weekly podcasts, as well as great events to bring the Sport for Business community together in person. Thank you once again for taking the time to listen in today.